Hello and welcome to Midori House, coming to you somewhat live from Studio One here in London. I'm Tyler Brulé. Coming up,
I'm proud of our start. Carioca winning the first medal.
Yeah, indeed.
Very special indeed.
If this wasn't a proper news program, I would lean across the desk here and high-five you, Fernando. But unfortunately, we've got to move on.
This year has been a pretty testing one, but there has been plenty of joy, too. We'll raise a glass to some of the stories that have made us smile in 2016. Also ahead,
I'm probably not the most popular passenger on a plane because sometimes I'm quite partial to taking my shoes off if it's
No, but I have
very clean, sort of, you know, nice socks and clean feet and things. So I am aware of that. I've got my old shoes on. I'll keep them on.
Not just that, he smells of tobacco as well. We'll be speaking to our Toronto Bureau Chief Thomas Lewis as we discuss some of the Monocle team's more unusual assignments. And
we kind of feel like he might be a bit of a throwaway Eurovision entry. There, he's a star. He was huge, you know. It was kind of like Kiss the Ring, you know, when I met Ross Anthony.
Our culture editor, Robert Bound, will be hopping down the stairs to talk all things Schlager. And we'll also be joined by our very own Secret Santa. That's all to come in the next hour here on Midori House. A very, very Christmas special right here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé. So welcome to Midori House. I'm joined by our editor, Andrew Tuck, and our executive producer, Mr. Tom Edwards. And here's a reminder of this very extraordinary year.
Um, zero, é ouro! Grite junto! Medalha de ouro para o Brasil nos Jogos Olímpicos do Rio de Janeiro!
There's been some controversies here and there, but you know, there's been so much negativity before that I think it was okay. I think everyone can agree that, you know, the worst didn't happen.
I want to build the wall. We need the wall. The Border Patrol, ICE, they all want the wall. We have some bad hombres here and we're going to get them out. Still
don't know what I was. Our next story takes us to Switzerland, where they've been boring away for the last 20 years on creating the world's longest and deepest tunnel.
161 points. Which is not enough to pass Ukraine. And we have a new winner of the Eurovision Song Contest 2016. It's Ukraine!
The British people have voted to leave the European Union, and their will must be respected. The will of the British people is an instruction that must be delivered.
Now it's time for America to bind the wounds of division. We have to get together. I say it is time for us to come together as one united people.
Whew, gentlemen, a lot to get through. I was going to say hello right at the very beginning. You didn't even get a word in edgewise. Andrew Tuck is here. Tom Edwards. Andrew, how are you? Shopping is done.
I'm very good, but I was really impressed with Tom playing the piano at the top of the show. I thought that was the tinkling. I haven't seen you tinkle your ivories on air before.
Oh, I like to keep surprising you, Andrew.
Okay, good. How are you?
Very well. I'm thrilled, in fact.
Good.
Tickled, even.
Good.
We've got some lovely beverages as well, courtesy of the cafe.
There's a kind of a nice, pleasing seasonal note in the air.
I wish we could
hear. And that's not Thomas Lewis's feet.
No, bring those up again.
It's the lovely scent of Glug and Glühwein here in Studio One. Andrew, if we look back across the year, and I think certainly around the mics, and there, you know, was a very particular voice hearing that of former Prime Minister David Cameron delivering the not so fantastic news that we would be leaving the European Union, probably one of the topics that we've spent the most time on this year, and I think very much sort of weighing in with our point of view, as we're a week out until we move into 2017, months away from when we're told that our new PM is going to trigger Article 50. How's your mood? Glühwein aside.
Well, I've gone from absolute despair to just kind of annoyance with the whole process. It was interesting at the weekend. I heard on another radio station of someone being interviewed, a kind of member of the public, who was asked how they'd voted and said that they'd voted to leave the European Union. And they were asked, why did you do this? What was your desire from this? And he said, oh, it was simply out of spite. I felt that, you know, lots of people have had a very good time of it lately and I wanted to make sure that they didn't. So I decided to vote leave. And so when I keep on hearing people saying, you know, oh, this was a very kind of measured debate and people thought long and hard about their decision and they came to, you know, a considered opinion about what they'd do. In fact, a lot of people did just vote like that to be annoying, not thinking about it, thinking it would upset the government of the time. And I still think that we're left with a decision which is bad for the UK, bad for Europe and bad for actually the whole world. And it's really interesting that the whole level of the debate is still so kind of grubby and annoying and full of, you know, kind of meanness. I don't think it's ever going to come good.
Okay, Tom, the onus is on you to make the rest of the show more chipper.
Well, I've been being relentlessly upbeat throughout 2016.
Well, you've been the worst person in this whole year at guessing what the outcome of any vote would be.
Andrew's been very disappointed because I think with hindsight now, he thinks that I wrongly predicted the outcome of all of these various things. No, what I said was that whatever the outcome, there'll always be a silver lining, even if there's a little cloud wrapped around it, Andrew. And I'll continue my relentless and frankly unfounded optimism into 2017 as well. I would have to say, though, I mean, Andrew's probably right. I can't really think of that many positives about Brexit. But who knows? I mean, maybe in these, you know, tough times, Tyler, you get a lot of creativity that expresses itself. We've lost a couple of amazing cultural lights this year. Maybe there'll be some new ones to burn in their stead by force of circumstances. It will prompt
maybe what he's saying, the positive might be, you're going to like living in Charlottenburg when we open up our when Studio 3 is going to be in Berlin.
I understand what he's saying. I think if people get a bit pissed off,
everyone behind the glass over there in the control room, don't get any ideas just yet. But step by step.
I think if people get a bit pissed off, they'll fight for the things that they want and believe in, and I don't think they've been very good at doing that in recent times. Look, I'm not some kind of happy clappy lefty, far from it. I'm a liberal who believes that actually in our cities we can pull together and do good things, that we are better off in a larger community, that there's a bit of give and take, and I don't judge people perhaps as quickly as some others have. And I realise that there's tests and things and it's complicated around migration, but in the end I'm a believer in, you know, good quality migration, and I don't believe that, I understand that the numbers have been huge in some areas, but in the end I believe that if it's done in a good way, it's positive for all of us.
There's your silver lining. Potential silver lining.
Exactly. And, I think fundamentally I agree with Andrew on the substance. But I also think there's a tendency, particularly when we're looking back at a year just gone, that's had some, what would you call them, turbulent, tempestuous times. Of course, naturally, to focus on the most tempestuous of them. But it's not been a year that's been entirely without moments, as we heard in that montage. There's been some things that can, you know, make you smile.
There's Eurovision.
This was a good news story. People, so they, it has been out there. It's been a little harder to find.
Yeah, well covered in the current forecast as well.
Yeah.
Looking at a lot of preparation underway in Kiev. Hopefully they'll pull it off as well. They've got many other things to concern themselves with. But I think it'll actually be one of the more interesting Eurovisions to watch, just given the geography this year. So, and you know, it'd be so politicized, just given the song, and this is supposed to be something which is non-political. And here we had a song which won, and now it is literally on Europe's front line.
And what's so intriguing is the Russians are going to have to pitch up in Kiev to kind of put on a good show. And it's, you know, I think it's maybe it's also a year that, you know, not a bad year, but in a way, so much came to the surface. Like we're talking about how great, you know, the Olympic Games were. But there's been a reflection in recent weeks on what happened during the London Olympics when it said that 1,000 Russian athletes cheated. So even the world of sport, you know, I think we've come to the realization that it's much murkier than we ever thought of, whether we're talking about, you know, FIFA, whether we're talking about the Olympic movement. But in a way, at least those things have begun to be told. You feel that in lots of places, the torch was shone in 2016, whether that was in Brazil, in a sense that, you know, actually the governments were endlessly put under the spotlight of, you know, showing up corruption. So those things are positive for me. In the end, the stories are all out.
Tom, go ahead very quickly though,
well,
because
say,
we have a special segment.
No, I know. I was going to mention it was interesting.
But go fast, fast.
Andrew cited sport there as yet another one of the areas. But interestingly, if we look at a year where you know the wrong decision was made, maybe in our view with Trump, with Brexit, look at sport. It was a year when the unlikely story, the fairy tales, came true. Your Leicester Cities of this world winning. So, you know, there were some surprising upsets
in
the right direction.
UK, we had some very good athletes.
Exactly. So, you know, again, there was always a chink of light amidst the gloom.
Indeed. Now, we have a little bit of a special segment to the programme. We're asking a couple of regulars to just throw us a question in the studio.
Hi, guys. I'm Martin Platt. I'm a senior research fellow at the Institute of Commonwealth Studies. And I'd like to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and ask you one question. What's the most cheerful, wonderful story you've had in 2016?
Well, there we go. And everyone's sort of looking around. But I'm going to start. I'm going to start with the chipper gentleman to my right. Tom Edwards, the happiest, most joyous story that you can think about.
I would say, well, it's from a serious realm, but I think it was definitely a good news story all round. And it's two-pronged. The end of the Cuba blockade and the end of Fidel Castro. And I think those are two things which will shape a really exciting future for Cuba and for the rest of the world. And it was interesting, you know, to come back to what Andrew was saying about, you know, we believe in good migration, this kind of thing. Well, this is a story that's about trade. It's about opening up. It's about, you know, blurring some of these old borders and divides. Now, it's true that some of these things might be challenged by a Trump administration, who knows, in 2017. But for now, that is a undeniably good story. You know, a tyrant, someone who really represented many things that were very bad about, you know, repressing human rights, about allowing democracy to flourish, is gone. A blockade that had lived for far too long is gone. I thought that was a undeniable one that will make 2016 live long in the memory for the right reasons.
Andrew.
Finn got to number two in British X Factor. That was quite good, wasn't it? It almost cheered us up. They failed.
I wish I'd picked that.
They failed. I kept on thinking of Marcus Hippie during those during those moments when that show was on. I was thinking he must be so excited.
And he knows every single Finn of note personally. He knows them.
Well, I'm sure.
As you would. So I liked that story.
Yeah, that's a very good one.
And I did like the diving for various reasons. I thought that was very good during Rio. That put a smile on my face. So there's two things. What more do you want?
As it does.
Yeah.
What about you, Tyler? Will you look back with anything of 2016 with fondness?
With fondness, I think a story which was a bit overlooked by the popular media, but I think we always try to shine a spotlight on this topic, but that was the somewhat overlooked business story in the New York Times. I think it hit us about mid-year, which talked about, you know, for the first time in a decade, we saw more independent bookstores opening up in the United States than at any other time. That was such a great news story. And it just, I think it went from there. It went to the Frankfurt Book Fair. Not a particular story that was, again, broadly reported, probably well reported in the trades, but just that we've seen an uptick in print sales. So that was very positive. And I think it puts us in a good position for the year ahead as well.
Yeah, and the same. I think, you know, we touched on it a little bit at the Monocle conference this year in Vienna, the revenge of analog, as we looked at how all those industries have come back. The same for the record industry. The world of physical and tactile is doing very well, and that's all good for the things that we believe in.
I've got one more, though. I was thinking, not just a couple weeks ago, was it 10 days ago? I rather like the announcement that Qantas is going to be able to fly finally nonstop between the UK and Australia. It's not quite Sydney, it's Perth. Place we like, we've covered it. How would you feel though, Andrew, if you sort of bought your ticket? You thought you were going to Australia, but you get off in Perth.
Well, I could go and see
getting off the plane in Perth.
Jamie Waters' parents, who works for us on the fashion team.
Jamie Waters. Yeah. What else could you do there?
My uncle is a resident of Perth.
Oh.
Big Charlie. You could stop in
Charlie
and see
Edwards
him as well. Yeah.
Is it Charlie Edwards?
Yeah.
Okay.
He went over in the 1980s. He said he was fleeing because of the fear of nuclear Armageddon. But
seriously?
I think maybe some people were after him. So.
Yeah, I was going to say witness protection. Is he really called Charlie?
No, that's it. That's him. My big Charlie.
He could stop and you have to be a very, very fast swimmer there as well, don't you? Because Jamie tells me when he was a kid, if you weren't in water, it's quite likely you might lose a leg.
Yeah, it's a bit shark-infested. It can be a bit bitey.
Can I also, Jamie, if I was a great white, off the western coast of Australia. What a target. Not the fastest swimmer, Jamie, I imagine.
But he's a bit kind of lean and thin. It'd probably be like only getting like one bit of bacon.
He'd definitely go for Charlie Edwards over that. That's a meal that would last him for a while.
Possibly. Gentlemen, the show continues. I think we're just about a quarter past the hour here at our little manger in London. You're listening to a very special pre-Christmas edition of Midori House with me, Tyler Brulé, Andrew Tuck, and Tom Edwards. I'm looking at the script. It says that we're supposed to have a special guest is going to be joining us at any moment. So we don't know who's behind the thing. Wooden oak door, but you know the door might fly open now. So let's just see who's there. We got jingling going on. We've got mince pies. It's Gillian Tobias who's here. Gillian Tobias, of course, a very, very familiar voice here on Monocle 24. Certainly very familiar around these mics, certainly for 5 years, 5 years plus at this point. Gillian, very nice to see you.
Happy Christmas.
Good,
I'm
Christmas
the Santa's elves. I'm bringing
eh?
You mince pies.
Very nice.
You got some golden balls around your neck?
Yes, for you, Andrew.
Very fetching.
Where's the wine?
There's a glue vine there to get you going. As if you're not already. Very nice to see you.
Happy Christmas.
Yeah, well, happy Christmas to you as well. Now, listen, all of us are going to be breaking. Of course, some of us come back into the studio for this. Julie, we should probably, just before the segment, or just before you came in, we were talking about high points, and let's just talk about high points. We don't want to talk about the low points. No. But if you look back at good news stories when you thought this was an interesting turning point, something that especially in what is, you know, everyone really is regarding this as one of the trickier news years. One story that would be interesting to do, maybe we should try to cover that before the year is out, is just how much, Tom, someone in a job like yours, how much people have had to readjust their news budgets this year. I mean, is, you know, our very good friends at the CBC, I mean, just, you know, every single week in, week out, you know, got to dip into the kitty again. But let's look on the positive, Gillian. What stood out for you?
I suppose the fact that, you know, when so much is going on and bubbling around in the cauldron, that, you know, Canada has had some amazing good news stories, especially in terms of welcoming refugees. Not just as a Canadian. I just, you know, the more I travel, the more people are name-checking Trudeau and Canadian government and the people, the everyday people who've been unbelievably welcoming. And I think it's a big story, but there's some amazing small stories there about the individual stories of and acts of kindness that I think are amazing and very inspiring.
Andrew, we were in Toronto 2 weeks ago for a little celebration. It was part of our Around the World in 72 Hours Christmas tour. But what was your, and you reminded me, that was probably your fourth trip to Canada this year. And I'm wondering if you sort of saw a bit of an evolution. Of course, you had to live through our October issue, our November issue, our Big Canada 2017 special, just in advance of the sesquicentennial. Thoughts and reflections?
Well, what's interesting is, I think what Gillian says is, that Trudeau thing is, even if you're not a supporter of Trudeau, and even if you're, you know, you have some questions about what he's done, and, you know, you have some question marks about your own nation, it can't help but do you good when your country's being talked about in a positive way. And I thought that actually it was striking at the party we did for Christmas. The many of the people I spoke to about that were saying, oh God, it's just really interesting to see how we're being regarded at the moment. And many of them weren't actually huge Trudeau fans, but they were aware that there was a positive story. There was a bit of kind of growth around that. And I just thought that, yeah, it was really great. And I think one of the best things we did about that Canada issue is when we compared the two cities of Chicago and Toronto, two cities of almost exactly the same size. And we looked at the murder rates in the two cities. And then you understand what integration and what, you know, making the most of your diversity means. You know, for a city like Toronto, it's tens. For a city like Chicago, it's hundreds of people murdered every year. And I don't know, it's striking when you're in Toronto that you feel that you're in a very North American city.
Well, I was just going to say, Andrew, we're almost in Toronto, in fact, right now, because also we have also a special guest who's also listening in. I believe Thomas Lewis is there. Hello.
Hello there, team. How are you?
Oh, my God. How long have you been there? It's like sort of like a...
I've just been lurking
like
in the shadows.
An odd elf, like, hiding behind your chimney.
Do you have your shoes on? Or are you just in your socks?
I have my shoes on. No, I've got my Christmas socks on, but I've also got my shoes on too, which aren't Christmas.
And other clothes, hopefully, as well.
And other, yeah, no, just those.
Okay,
two
enough for our listeners. Thank you very much.
Why do I worry about your big toe poking through your sock? That's my impression of Thomas Lewis without his shoes on.
My Christmas socks are in very good condition. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, very good to hear. I mean, of course, clearly you heard all of that. Yeah. You know, again, you've been up to Ottawa. We've sent you high north, east and westbound. What's sort of the mood? And I guess, you know, we've reflected a little bit on the first 100 days. We've now been through the first year of what's been quite extraordinary, particularly given the continent that we're talking about as well. Do you think that this is the moment where Trudeau has to come good on a few more points?
I think it certainly should be. And I think what's interesting about Trudeau's sort of, you know, first year in office is that as honeymoons go for prime ministers, it's been remarkably long and remarkably trouble-free, actually. And I think it's only really, say, in the last couple of weeks that we've started seeing these sort of, you know, things you'd expect to see once you're in office. So a little scandal bubbling here. Obviously, his remarks after the death of Fidel Castro sort of were derided pretty heavily from all quarters. And I think, you know, it's kind of interesting to see how he responded to those. And I'm not sure. I think they kind of sort of caught him off guard slightly. So I think, you know, the next year will be really interesting from a sort of leadership point of view for Trudeau, because he's played the PR game so remarkably well. And I think has got a lot of momentum behind a lot of his ideas that were characterized during the general election campaign as maybe being a little bit naive, some of them as being a bit sort of, you know, wistful possibly. But I think, you know, he has got the momentum behind them, but I think he really does now need to sort of start putting those things into practice, I think, because the honeymoon can't last forever.
Gillian, what's your take on it? Because when you look back at, yeah, as you said, it's been a great year for the country. But at the same time, we did hear a lot of promise of these grand infrastructure projects. And it is funny because, you know, when we at the top of the program, we were playing a little bit of color from the launch of the Gotthard Tunnel, etc. Are we waiting for that other moment still?
I don't know. I think there's no magic wand, and it does take time. So I think it's still early days yet. I think a lot of my journalist colleagues, you know, they feel he's inexperienced, you know, naive on many levels. But I think they do feel confident that he's brought in a very strong team of experienced people. And I think, you know, he does need time, you know, to bed in, I think.
Tom?
Well, what strikes me about it is it shows what a capable politician can do. Now, you know, Trudeau's got, you know, yeah, he had a long honeymoon period. He's proved very popular. And everyone's saying, oh, well, look, everywhere you look around the world in Western democracies, it's all about anti-establishment figures. It's about people, you know, wanting somebody offering them something different. You know, Trudeau couldn't claim to be that. You know, look at his family background, of course. It was the job he was kind of born to do, if you like. And yet, he's brought a freshness to it. He's brought a popular touch, but not a populist touch. And so I think it shows that if you are a capable politician, you can galvanise the electorate, even in a democracy that maybe is a bit fed up with some of the political class. And I think it's a good lesson for some other European countries to pay heed to, that, you know, perhaps we don't have the personnel, and that's one of the reasons that explains the shift to the right.
It's also interesting the shades of difference between the political parties in Canada. When we had the dinner a couple of weeks ago in Toronto, I sat next to a gentleman who's running to be the leader of the Conservative Party. Now, he had, of course, some, you know, question marks against Trudeau, but one of the things was about the migration story. Rather than saying, as you'd imagine, someone further on the right saying, oh, you know, I disagree with everything he does and it's wrong and we should stop this, he was saying, I think he's kind of stolen some of our colours, because we were saying bring in, you know, X thousand. We were going to do it in over a slower period of time and slightly fewer. But in fact, even on the right, we kind of agree with this. We have to remember that we're a nation of migration. For most of the people who live here, it doesn't feel to them that it goes very far back. And I had a really fascinating conversation with him about, like, for example, the number of Ukrainians in Canada, the biggest community outside Ukraine, people who came from the 1800s, still speak Ukrainian, still have all of their kind of heritage, you know, haven't felt the need to, you know, change their circumstances so much they forget their past, but they feel very Canadian, they're Canadian first. And he was talking about all these amazing communities that have done particularly well in Canada over time. But again, just interesting speaking to someone on the right, and it was not his take that you would go in the opposite direction. There's a kind of a closer feeling of what Canadianness is about.
But is that just a more, is there a more grown-up politics in Canada? Is it a bit more conciliatory? Is it just because it's not hostage to fortune in the way that certainly south of the border and unfortunately more here in Europe. I don't know whether it's just a more grown up political discussion that takes place.
Let the Canadians handle this, Gillian. I mean, I wonder one thing which came up, and this was also when we were in Ottawa, is we don't have the shock jockery. We don't have the political radio stations. They've started. I mean, they're there to some extent, but there's just not that sense of partisanship, particularly in the media. I would say.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, certainly south of the border, there's been a completely, you know, different kind of very vocal opinion journalism, which is shaping so many people's judgments from such an early age. And Canada, you know, does even journalistically have a mellower media landscape. And it's still, although it's shrinking dramatically, you know, print, and I hear woeful tales of the main newspapers shrinking, but still people are getting much of their news from the national broadcasters and the newspapers and the key magazines.
Do you think that, I wonder for you, when you think about Canada, again, having this the conversation I had, he was pointing out, you know, the biggest number of Icelanders anywhere outside of Iceland are in Canada. You know, huge communities of Swedish people, of Norwegian people, all came to Canada. Do you think there's something from the social democratic roots of all those northern nations that's fed into Canada? That, in fact, yeah, you've got extremely rich people in Canada, but they don't display their wealth in the way that you would in the US. There feels to be a sense that you need to kind of rub along a bit more together.
I think it's a very good point. And, you know, we did that story. We sent Marcus Hippie to Thunder Bay. Thunder Bay, home to the biggest Finnish community in the world outside of Finland. And so I think that there is this Baltic and certainly Nordic world. And I think that they came at a time and, you know, we're all, you know, I think have played their role in, you know, creating real prosperity. Early days in Montreal, I think also Toronto as well. And I think that does play into it. I would say also, you know, and you could say that sense of social capital, German communities, Polish communities, I think many others, I think had a very big role in the country. I just, you know, having, and we just came from there, I don't think you caught that program, but Gillian and I, there was a program which ran for a very long time in Canada, over 30 years, called Canada AM, which it wasn't the best morning show in the world, but they've replaced it with this absolutely dreadful program, which is fronted by Ben Mulrooney. You know, he's nice enough, lovely, and he's certainly the sharpest one on deck, but it's a repeat of all of, and this is where Canada tries to mirror the States. They didn't look elsewhere in the world. They didn't think, how can we do something different? We'll just try to copy the US morning shows. And it's Ben Mulrooney, sort of dressed a little bit sort of Savile Row light, surrounded by, if I hate to say it, but a bunch of tarts.
Yeah, I mean, that, 80s windows. But, you know, it's sad because they misjudge their audience and they keep thinking that they have to kind of become popular and lower the level in order to get good ratings. But in fact, they're losing them that way because, you know, the dumbing down isn't the answer, I think, for Canadians.
Well, Gillian, it was lovely seeing you.
Nice to see you, too.
Yeah, we'll look forward
to seeing
you. Am I being injected?
You're Mauritius bound as well.
I am. A bit of sunshine and turquoise vase. So.
Well, have a very, very Merry Christmas. Tom Edwards and Andrew Tuck will be sticking around. I believe also Rob Bound. And listen, if you can keep his socks on, I think Thomas Lewis, our Toronto bureau chief, will also be staying with us. Well, you're listening to a very special Christmas edition of Midori House. Going away for a short break. Stay with us.
Okay, so 2016 wasn't the greatest of years, but don't worry, there are plenty of reasons why 2017 will be better. And we've packed lots of them into more than 250 pages of the new edition of the Monocle Forecast. It's the magazine for those who want to look over the horizon and spot the new opportunities the new year will bring. From the rising global powers to keep an eye on, to the startups to invest in, and the cities you'll want to call home. It's packed with opinion and wit, with ideas and provocations, and guaranteed to keep you talking all the way through 2017. The Monocle Forecast. Buy your copy today and know what's happening tomorrow.
You're hitting the bottom of the hour here on Monocle 24, a very special Christmas edition of Midori House with me, Tyler Brulé, Andrew Tuck, Tom Edwards. And I'm happy to say Robert Bound. Hello, Robert Bound.
Hi, Tyler Brulé. I like the fact that you were just talking about Canadians not lowering the bar and losing their listeners, but thanks nonetheless for welcoming me to the programme.
here he is. Rob, we thought we would have a, just, you know, we would sort of follow that up though with a little bit of a musical flourish and a little bit of an info flourish as well. This is a just a little cultural montage of 2016.
Well, last week, as we put to bed the December January.
Oh wait, don't tell us yet, because I just want to know. Does this sound familiar to you, Rob Bound? Just.
Oh yeah, I can feel something.
Yeah,
something's stirring.
What's
somewhere.
Happening?
Something's coming to fruition in a large halle.
Whoa.
You know, the directors responsible for his work for cooking the children's food every day and putting them to bed at night and making sure that the family, the movie family, grows up and flourishes. But the family, the resourcing of the family and the holding the family together essentially is the role of the producer.
They had, I think, a rather mediocre song, but certainly everyone in the Polish communities all over Europe wanted to vote for them. Fernando, I don't know what your thought was on that.
No, it's absolutely. And let's remember, televote in Poland always does very well. Do you remember that track with the Polish butter churners?
Actually, that's one of my favorites.
It was the favorite televote in many countries.
Fernando Augusto Pacheco is here to tell us all we need to know about the Rio Games. And he even has his own jingle. Yeah, I'm liking it. It's good.
Do you like my new jingle? Rob?
Did you choose your own jingle? Because it's very important.
I was thinking about sexy bossa nova. That's what I was trying to aim, because that's what this Olympics is about.
I'm seeing some hips swaying down a beach.
Rob, you're still seeing some hips swaying down a beach.
That's just reminding me of how much I like that country. I've missed that. It's one of the it's places
while,
we haven't been.
It?
Yeah, haven't been this year, actually. We have our own correspondent, you know, to go and Sasha down the beach.
So on that, so are we doing resolutions already? 2017?
Yes.
Year of the
year of Sasha.
Yeah, well, year of the Sasha and year of the Brazil bounce back. Depends what kind of trunks you're wearing.
Yeah, exactly. We'll count that as a commission. We can find some reason to head off into the sunset, can't we?
Yeah, and you've been thinking of some good stories down south. Not that far south.
What's fascinating is that when you keep on reading the story of Brazil, it's like the southern states, which are, you know, quite Germanic, they've done rather well during this whole kind of, because they have so many kind of huge industries there. They're dealing so much with Europe.
They tend to be German industries as well.
Guy Lutz is from down south, as they say. And, they've done rather well. So we're going to do a little bit of a report about southern Brazil.
Well, we look forward to that.
Yeah.
And that might even be, we should talk a little bit about it also. There is going to be 2017, there's also going to be a time of significant relaunch as well, isn't there? I mean, we have a February issue, which has been shipped off to press, but there's going to be, Rob's got all kinds of new things happening in his section. Well, we do sort of cover to cover.
Yeah, so in our March issue, which comes out in the middle of February, which is issue 101, is the 10th anniversary issue of Monocle. So amazing that a decade has flown by. And we're going to be doing a bit of a kind of, not just moving the furniture around, but knocking a couple of walls down as well and putting an extension on.
Excellent.
that was a metaphor. I wondered how long that could run. Perfectly executed. It's that kind of journalism that we're going to see in issue 101 of Monster.
Yeah, well, and I think we should say though, Rob, that you have a lot to do with the change as well, because seriously, one of the best pieces of journalism this year that we will all agree on was when we shipped you off to Germany to cover Schlagerboom. Now, for those who missed, of course, the festivities, they didn't tune into ARD, they didn't even read the story yet, Rob. What was Schlagerboom?
Schlagerboom is an unusual thing. It's a celebration of Schlager, which some of our listeners may know, some of them may not, but it's essentially kind of German country music updated to some period kind of just shy of 1985, no later. and it's good times music, it's party music, it's music that all generations kind of sing along together. Some people will remember DJ Ötzi from the 90s, who's kind of a bit like a sort of I didn't want to call him a Gonta Seed Eminem, but he's got the beanie. He's got the beanie, but he ain't got the rhymes. Who's kind of one of the more kind of outre left field characters in Schlager. And the diva of Schlager is a very blonde and uber German lady called Helene Fischer, who is the kind of diva, the goddess that bestrides the scene like a colossus. And there are a lot of people trying to look up her skirt. Only because she's so tall.
Oh, is she tall?
This is a metaphor. tall. She is, I'm still
she,
doing
she
that.
Is tall. Yeah, yeah.
No, she's not desperately tall. But she's not.
Yeah, but there's some very good camera angles then, aren't there?
There are some very good camera angles. And Schlager Boom is a huge thing. It is something, it shares a lot of DNA with the Eurovision Song Contest and TV, live music on the TV. It's camp, it's bright, it's 4.5 hours long. And Germany's main broadcaster dedicates almost all of her Saturday nights to this thing called Schlager Boom, which has, even the boom in Schlager Boom has more O's than is necessary, but sadly no umlauts.
Well, and in fact, it's also for Helene Fischer, it's launched her own program as well. So she has her very own variety show. So if it's a bit sort of quiet on Christmas Eve, Tom Edwards, you might want to tune in. I'm sure you can download it off of ARD. I think we should, just for people who might have missed it at the beginning, and I always like a bit of Helene Fischer, let's just have a little, let's just bring people up to speed as to what's happening there.
Wir ziehen durch die Straßen und die Clubs dieser Stadt. Das ist unsere Nacht, wie für uns beide gemacht. Oh, 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 oh. Ich schließe meine Augen, lösche jedes Tabu. Küsse auf der Haut, so wie ein Liebes-Tattoo.
Had to take it down there before the whole studio distorted. That's Helene Helene Fischer. Sorry, Rob has also jumped into not jumped
seasonal.
Into jumped onto a minced heart. Rob,
finally balanced there, Rob. Finally balanced.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that the whole sort of Schlager thing was amazing. Great piece of journalism, dear listeners. If you haven't managed to read the piece, absolutely. It's a great piece of journalism.
There's a bit of old school monocle in there as well. It's beautiful photographs and an unusual story, and of course there is big business as well, and that's always one of the things that's defined a good culture story over the last 10 years, I suppose, is also the fact that Germany is a CD market still, and this is one of the few genres of music, the age group that like this kind of music still buy it on CD. It's the kind of thing you'll have on your car.
But I was funny, because when you saw the pictures, there was quite a few people in, you know, kind of dirndls and traditional dress, but it doesn't kind of veer that much in traditional, like, umpah music.
It's not super umpah.
No, yeah. And then it's kind of Eurovision, but it is a bit more Germanic than that. It sits in a kind of a hard-to-define spot, actually.
It's a hard-to-define spot. It's a small country. It's landlocked. It definitely has its own opinions. It can look after itself. There's a lot to love, let's face it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
At the start, in the setup piece, we heard a little clip from David Putnam.
Yeah.
Standard interview for you this year?
We did some great interviews in our big interview strand here on Monocle 24. I think all four of us around this table got lucky and did some fantastic interviews. David Putnam was great. This was just after Brexit. I mean, obviously a legendary film producer, but someone that was a Remain representative, and stumped up some money for the campaign and wished it had been done better. But he's also on the board of governors of the BBC, and he had a lot of interesting things to say about how the media battle was won, and frankly how he thought that when nine out of 10 people say one thing and one person says the other, the BBC always felt that it should give that argument 50% of the airtime. So he was very interesting on all manner of things, and he's a daddy.
Tom, do you think, and just obviously off the back of the US elections, and certainly a lot of the wound licking that's going on, the soul searching on editorial floors, do you think when something that big comes around again, maybe in a bit of straight reporting, the BBC will, of course, have to abide by their editorial guidelines. But do you think you would start to see more comment pieces online and giving perhaps a different voice?
Well, I'd like to hope so. And it's interesting, I think, instructive for us, even on our station, that, you know, at times of particular political turbulence, you know, we see an uptick in our numbers because I think people know that they're going to come to a forum where they'll hear an opinion that's actually informed, but it's unafraid to be opinionated, and it's not just towing a party line. I mean, just to go back to what I said at the top of the show about, you know, getting good culture out of these periods of turbulence. We've seen it in the past. Now, I don't know if Rob would share any optimism that, you know, post-Brexit, post-Trump, are we going to see, and whether, you know, Putnam and others have shared this idea with you, you tend to see better
Ladies
creative
expression. That wasn't a narwhal coming through the street. That was Andrew Tuck dealing
with his nose. Is that too much to hope for?
Well, I remember, it was one of those things, the music in Britain during the time of Margaret Thatcher was amazing and rich, almost in opposition to her. So I wonder whether the good will out. We need artists more in 2017 than we've ever needed them before, you know, to make a statement, make a stand, all the rest of it. But it's one of those funny things as well. These two huge news events that have we will use the word afflicted because we probably all agree around this table, but have happened in 2016 in the UK and in the United States, which will have knock-on effects for everybody else. I wonder whether you judge your quality of life by what happens to you or simply what's happening in the news. Mm-hmm. We've got to take it back to ourselves. And, you know, running a magazine, running a radio station, we can give people a different skew on it, a different view.
Andrew, but how much responsibility do we have as an organization next time out that people don't just come to Monocle 24, to any of our outlets, to look at themselves in a mirror, to certainly hear themselves in an echo chamber?
I think people have always heard themselves in a bit of an echo chamber. It's where you live, the friends you have. There's nobody who knows what everybody else is thinking in the country, and that's impossible. And of course, you'll hang out with people who are like-minded. The fact that happens online, yeah, maybe it happens a little bit more in extremists, and certainly the feed you get, you know, you can be thinking that everybody's thinking the same thing because it looks a little bit official. But I think it is one of those things that's been ever thus. You know, if you were somebody who was, you know, working in a mine 50 years ago, you certainly didn't have your finger on the pulse of what, you know, people in London were thinking, and vice versa. That's always been the nature of politics. But I think what has been great in the past is that you had political parties that could bring together people who represented very different constituencies. So take Labour, for example. They could have represented, you know, a kind of a well-to-do intellectual audience in Hampstead, and they could have represented a shipbuilding community. And their MPs would have come to London and together brought together those opinions of their constituents and made something that was, you know, that represented their party's beliefs. And I think that's what's happened is you have so many MPs now who, I don't know that they're very good at doing that. We've had so many fractious parties. When you look at Labour, I can't believe there's a very cohesive conversation going on within that party. And that's when things fall down. So you can't, that's the whole point of having representatives and MPs, is that they can take your views and go and mix them with the views of other people. And I don't think we have the MPs and the kind of the political setup, whether it's in the UK or many other European countries, that effectively works like that anymore.
Robert, you talk about 2017 hopefully being a year of, let's say, not just protest ballads, but maybe it does produce a different genre of music. You did a great story this summer as well, which was looking at the cost of artist studios and what it costs to, yeah, set up shop, and what you get, you know, for, or what it will cost you for, you know, 50, 100, 500 square meters. And it took us to some interesting parts of Europe. Is there a fear when we already hear about this evaporation? I was talking to someone, you know, who's in the talent acquisition business for our sector, saying there's just not as many people coming to the UK right now. There aren't as many. If you need, let's say, a top flight photo assistant, there aren't as many on the books as there might have been in August.
Yeah,
is that a danger?
There is a sort of a practical and an intellectual challenge to what's happened this year, which is you kind of feel like you don't want to come because you're not welcome, and it'll be more expensive to come, and it'll be, well, maybe it's better value if you're a European now to come to Britain than it was in the last sort of 5 years, but it's the idea that what will happen if you come in December, will you be able to stay in 2 Decembers' time, let alone next December? So there is a practical thing about it, but there's also there is a great sense of acceptance and a lack of it, which obviously seems to trickle down from the top. If you think that half the people walking down the street would rather you weren't there, you'll choose a different street to walk down. Maybe you'll choose to walk down a Paris street or a Berlin street, right?
Indeed. Tom, Edward, just before we go, hopefully there hasn't been sort of an evaporation of CVs coming for internships that hasn't been drying up, because otherwise, and I'll sort of put you on the spot and do a 30-second pitch to make sure that we've got enough people who can come and ensure we have enough good guests around the mics and elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely happening. And it was kind of it's a corollary of what we said about the echo chamber. I think people who have a more international and an unashamedly internationalist view, it was never a problem to seek counsel, to ask for other people's opinions. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that certainly sitting in London, you know, I think London will, we've seen some sparks, but London will largely be immune to a lot of the problems. And, you know, we know that London voted, was it 70-30, I think, something like that, or 60-40 and plus to remain. It painted its picture there. I think London will probably ride things out. I think it's got enough heft, it's got enough clout, and it's got that international aspect. And we certainly see that. You know, our office makeup hasn't changed. Those applications you talk about haven't changed. They're still coming from all quarters. And let's hope that can endure and offer us something of a counterpoint to, yeah, some of the worst excesses that the media would tell us is the prevailing view.
Mm. I just forgot, Thomas Lewis is still there. He's supposedly on the line in Toronto still. Hello, Toronto, are you there?
Hello there, Toronto is here, like a coiled spring, Tyler.
You must have all your clothes off now, because that has to be the hottest, that has to be the hottest studio. I had to do, when I was in Toronto, deliberately, you went downstairs and turned the air conditioning off. I was in Toronto 2 weeks ago, and I had to do an interview with one of the Canadian radio stations. And you stuffed me in that studio, and I came out about 5 kilos lighter.
Yes, it's a bit steamy.
Maybe no bad
here
thing
too
at this time of year, but anyway.
I've taken a couple of layers off, but I'm keeping it decent, Tyler, so don't worry.
A little bit earlier in the program, we heard from one of our regular guests who is posing a question. We have another surprise guest who has a question for all of us to answer.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Burke, a professor of modern contemporary history at University College London. And first of all, Merry Christmas, and I'd like to know where the wine is around this table. I do have a question for you. What is the strangest story you've had to investigate this past year?
Well, what a wonderful question from Ms. Black. Well, I guess the first part of the question, we can confirm that there was hot wine at the start of the program. It's warmish wine around the table.
She came on, can I just say, she came on to do a bit of a wine, because she's a real wine nut.
I think she's a master.
Yeah,
a master,
so she came
wine
on to, we did a story about, you know, why people were still interested in Beaujolais Nouveau. And she came on to talk about that. And then she, off the back of it, riffed on kind of all these different wines that should recommend.
Well, that's good.
I missed that. I'd like to do that.
Yeah, well, let us know next time, Tom Edwards.
I
think it would be a good, I think it would be a good thing to, pair a good political story with a good wine.
What do you need to drown your sorrows?
Well, not just drown your sorrow, but what would be the right red drink with, you know, a Donald Trump evening, or, you know.
Yeah. Any box of wine, I think, will do. In that circumstance.
Maybe, Tom, we'll start with you. The most curious story you've had to investigate this year. No, not you. I said Thomas, not Tom Edwards.
Thomas, over to you.
You only commission things. You don't investigate. You just sort of sit back in your corner office.
Well, this wasn't really an assignment as such, but we got invited to a conference call with Dolly Parton in September. Which was probably one of the strangest phone calls I've ever been involved in. She was doing a big grand Canadian tour, and we were very kindly invited to take part in this. I was ready to go with my little list of questions for Dolly. We were told that we weren't allowed to talk politics at all, so that was fine. So instead,
you're like,
yes, exactly. So Dolly instead told us about her favourite foods, among them. Potatoes are my weakness, is a direct quote from that conversation. Mashed potatoes, potato chips, French fries, everything. She loves a good potato, does Dolly Parton. And we had this little sort of glimpse into her life. And then I was ready to go, save the best till last, I thought to myself. And the conversation ended before I'd even got to say hello to her in person.
So you didn't inquire into the health of her Jersey Royals.
Next time, saving that one up. Didn't want to peak too soon, Rob. So, So that was a rather odd little moment, I think, we had here at the Toronto Bureau. And she was on speakerphone, so all my colleagues here too enjoyed her tales of potatoes and other things too.
Rob?
I was lucky to go on, other than Schlagerboom, I went on a lovely road trip through France for our escapist issue in the summer. I think the strangest one this year was stepping aboard the MSC Preziosa to do a story on cruise ship entertainers, which is something I've wanted to do for yonks. We finally did it. We set sail from, where did we start? Well, we sailed around the Med. Again, we started in Rome. Rome at Civita Vecchia, and we ended up in Marseille. So let's get confused with the road trip and the cruise, and that was fantastic. The world of cruise ship entertainers is deeply strange, very clubbable, very close. A lot of windowless cabins with people sort of practicing their aerobic exercises. We got to peek in and have a look.
It's probably also the last time that a glossy magazine of our scale has run a full page spread of a conga line.
Yeah, exactly. Congas have been one of the leitmotifs of this year in the culture section, I think. Maybe it's faster, fitter, and stronger for 2017, but I hope not.
Can you get a conga line going in a car? That's tricky, isn't it?
That's pretty tricky.
I'm sure you've tried.
That's pretty tricky.
More than once.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was an assignment I loved. Yeah.
I mean, that was one for the team.
Then.
That wasn't a donkey in the manger. It was Andrew Tuck. Andrew, you're right.
Yeah, that's me. I'm doing lots of various sound effects. You've heard me munching a kind of a nice pie. Sniffling, yeah, snorting.
Wheezing like a whale. Tell me, Andrew, again, you're very busy. You write the odd piece, but in terms of what you've commissioned and said, this was something essential or something joyous that you sent one of our correspondents out to deliver.
Well, I was going to actually touch on the story that I did. I think The Escapist is the point of the year when people get to go to kind of really amazing places and do interesting stuff. So I know that Josh went to Buffalo and, again, a city that's underreported, had an amazing time. Mm. And I got to go to the Azores. Now, the Azores is kind of interesting.
How's the house coming along there?
I'm not going to move there. No, I like it. I like it a great deal. It's very windswept. It's very in the middle of the Atlantic. You sense that, you know,
You're in the middle of the Atlantic.
Yeah, the weather changes literally within seconds. It can be absolutely sunny, then lashing with rain. I had a kind of amazing time. It's volcanic, it's lush, it's very, very removed from everywhere. And, you know, it's one of those places where you can pop in and see the president, and as we did. And we went to the local newspaper, which is based in the main town. And it was an office of like six or seven people. And what was great about it was, actually, it wasn't a local paper. It was, you know, it was a kind of national newspaper, but with seven people. Mm. And they had the same concerns about that you'd have on the Washington Times. They were like talking about, you know, how much they should use digital and the kinds of stories that they needed to do to kind of attract a new readership. But they're kind of, it's called the Azoriana, and their masthead is an eagle. And in the lobby, they have a stuffed eagle, but it looked like roadkill. It was like slightly drooping of wing, and it was like it slipped on its perch a bit.
I love that. And you get up close and it's just a blue tit.
Yeah. Back to Dolly Parton.
I know.
Tom Edwards now.
Well, it was interesting to pick up, Todd, on the thing you were saying earlier. Obviously, you know, we host the stack when you're on the road. I look after the programme, and there have been so many good print stories this year. We talked about, you know, Monocle going from strength to strength, independent magazine sector, but even some of the big players still showing lots of ingenuity. I mean, even if we look at a market like, just say, Germany, how many great magazines out of Germany this year, whether it's sort of new variants from the likes of Die Zeit, Frankfurt Allgemeine Zeitung bringing us a new quarterly, being unafraid to, you know, invest in print, bring, you know, even quite established brands, some marks which are known for being a little austere, a little serious, to life with real vim and vigour. And on that show, I think almost every week on the stat, there's been some good news print story from some quarters. So throughout all of the turbulence, maybe that is a surprise. It's been relentlessly positive.
And and also relentlessly underreported elsewhere. Mm. I mean, I think it's here we've talked, you know, I think we always come back to, you know, one of the big high point events for us, which is, you know, the Frankfurt Book Fair. Why, Rob, why do you think something like the Frankfurt Book Fair, where movie deals for the next decade are being done, and, you know, Netflix are probably signing up, you know, what is going to be their next 10-part box set, why are we not at the heart of this? I'm saying we, broader media, but why are we not at the heart of the point of origin?
I think the success of things like Frankfurt is precisely because they are not reported. They have not become an oversubscribed event. They have not become a Comic-Con, or they haven't had to popularize themselves and lose their spirit. They haven't had to clean up their act at their parties. Business is done eye to eye.
Andrew, we came and close,
it's,
though.
It's good
in,
stuff.
Yeah, at the Hessischer Hof, in the bar. I think, Andrew, we left early, and when we do leave, you know, reasonably early. But I think there probably is some cleaning up that's being done.
The bar there is amazing because you can smoke indoors. So there's lots of kind of old school guys smoking huge cigars. There's like the kind of fun young team over from Milan who are kind of like dancing away around the piano, begging him to play more kind of versions of Wonderwall, which I turns out I quite like as well. There's a lot of kind of getting off with each other going on. It's definitely a lot of first night shags.
So really, this is an assignment next year, right? This is just the
absolutely
be the barman or be the.
I think actually just broadcast
be the barfly.
Just broadcasting from Jimmy's bar at the Hessischer Hof would
that
be.
Sounds like the one.
It wasn't Torslezy, but there was like a really kind of senior gentleman, like something out of The Great Beauty.
Absolutely.
Yeah, dancing with a really young woman in a very tight dress. I'm not sure if cash was being exchanged, but who cares? But it was.
That's when, who cares? Yeah, that was the great thing.
There was like proper twirling, good, really good dancing going on.
But amidst, what, 125 other people in close proximity?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, you could have been chatting to Andrew literally next door, and you could have had sort of. Yeah, a bum in Hervé Léger sort of bumping up against you, which maybe would be no bad thing.
It's
I don't know.
It's a date. If you're asking, it's a date.
Book it in next October. Just before we go, quick roundtable. Tom Edwards, top gift you've purchased. You don't have to say who it's for necessarily, or maybe just turn the volume down if they're in the room when this goes out. And what you're hoping to get from Santa in 2 days' time.
See, boringly, I basically only buy children's gifts now. Everyone else takes a back seat, who I know, essentially. So that's bad news for them, if they're listening. What would I like? I don't know. I've got my own a couple of, beautiful books to continue that print motif.
Okay.
A couple of special ones, which I've written in my message to Santa.
To Santa already?
Yeah, so hopefully they'll come weaning.
So you don't want new wheels in the driveway?
Oh, or? No.
No, none of that.
It's okay. Not, I feel like it's not the environment for that.
It's not, okay. No. Rob?
Oh, well, I bought a painting in Paris recently. That's a good one, so she mustn't know about that. The gift is the driveway, not the car. That's what's happening. It's a new house.
Oh,
yeah.
I like the sound of that. So walls to hang it on. That's good. Toronto, I guess it's going to be, you must be winging your way back to Wales almost. So wheels up soon for you. Either what to give or receive?
I have put, on my Christmas list, my own, I've put some new socks.
And 400 duty free.
Yeah. 400 Super Kings.
Yes, of course. The essentials.
Very nice. Andrew.
I actually got rather excited at our Christmas fair and I bought lots of stuff that I don't know who it's for. I've got a feeling it may be for myself.
I was in Tokyo with you and I thought, oh my goodness, look at all the things you're buying for yourself.
Oh my God, just in Tokyo size. I got really carried away. And then in Toronto I got carried away as well. I bought stuff from the Monocle shop as well. So I'm a good advert for the Monocle shop.
But there's no disappointment if you buy your own gifts.
Well, no, I buy
just what I wanted.
None of my family will be listening at this moment. So I have a problem you buy stuff for your family that you know you will never see again, but they're very nice things and you're hoping that one day they'll come back to you.
Goodness.
Well,
and on that merry
hello, welcome
note,
to The Long View with Andrew Tuck.
We are going to have to draw a line there on this Christmas Eve edition. Well, not quite, night before Christmas Eve edition of Midori House. And that's all the time we have for this edition of the program. Today's program was produced by Reese James, researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Alexa Sogol. Our studio manager today has been Toby Hammond. And so from all of the team here at Monocle 24, I think it might be the last time you might hear from me for this year, but I think maybe on some Christmas eggs as well. In fact, you know what they've said? They've actually packed off a whole live, I think this might be a whole uplink dish in my garden in Italy, because I believe I'm actually going to be doing Christmas Eve and Christmas Day from Italy as well. Anyway.
Very nice.
Yeah, gentlemen, to all of our listeners, a huge thanks for this year and have a very Merry Christmas. Goodbye.